Raised Sports is a proud member of the Storyhanger Podcast Network. For more information, go to storyhanger.com. Hello, everyone. This is Bob Harkins. I'd like to thank everyone who participated in our January contest and gave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. A special shout out to James of New York, who was our winner. I hope he wears his t-shirt proudly. Now, just because the contest is over doesn't mean you can't still review and rate us on Apple Podcasts. Please do, in fact. But I'd like to tell you that in February, we're going to have another contest, and again, you can win a t-shirt. This time, we're going to reward one lucky new member of our Patreon club. It's simple. This month only, everyone who becomes a subscriber at patreon.com/raisedsports will be entered into a drawing. At the end of the month, we'll draw a name and send the winner a t-shirt. Simple as that. And to become a subscriber, it's only $1 a month. It's that simple. So help us out. Become a member at patreon.com and you can win a shirt. And tell your friends, too. Thank you for your support. Now on with the show.
The equipment manager brought me 3 helmets. And I tested them. And I ended up taking them back to the Colts. And I said, here they are. And they said, well, what's the result? So I killed all three of your football players. What? I said, let me tell you something. I wouldn't put a helmet like that on my dog.
For decades now, football has been America's favorite sport. We love its athleticism, its speed, its grace. And if we're being honest, we also love its violence and its brutality.
He hasn't moved since he took that hit.
The players are modern-day gladiators, sacrificing their bodies for every yard of Coliseum turf.
Once again, a violent collision. This one's head-to-head.
They get dinged up, they get their bells rung, and then they shake it off and get back out there, all for our entertainment.
Are you not entertained?
But it is becoming increasingly apparent that there is a price to be paid for this entertainment. Long-term effects that can dramatically impact the lives of both the athletes and their loved ones.
People need to know that the human brain is a post-mitotic organ. It doesn't have any reasonable capacity to cure itself of injuries.
Welcome to Season 1 of the Raised Sports Podcast, in which we'll tackle the issue of concussions and CTE, brain trauma in the sport of football.
He took a vicious hit. He's still down, hasn't moved.
What does it all mean for the health of the athletes, these modern-day gladiators?
I don't know how you take this out of the game of football. I don't know if there's anything you can do.
And how will our growing knowledge of the issue impact the future of the sport itself? In the long run, is it all worth it?
Atwater just killed Randy Hilliard.
Episode 8, I wouldn't put a helmet like that on my dog. It's February 18th, 2001, and the sports world has its eyes on Daytona, Florida, where NASCAR is running its version of the Super Bowl, the Daytona 500. On the final lap of the race, Michael Waltrip is leading. His teammate, Dale Earnhardt Jr., is in second, and it looks like smooth sailing for them because their boss, Dale Earnhardt Sr., the NASCAR legend, is sitting in third place, and he's kind of boxing everybody out, running interference, holding off a host of fast, aggressive drivers. Now, as the crowd battles for position on that final lap, one of those drivers, Sterling Marlin, accidentally clips Earnhardt's car. It's the slightest of bumps, but at those speeds, it's a big problem. Both cars veer down towards the apron. Earnhardt struggles for control, overcorrects, and slides back up across the track, colliding with Ken Schrader's car before running head-on into the concrete retaining wall. An investigation later found Earnhardt was going about 160 miles per hour when he hit the wall. The force of the collision was about the equivalent of a 62-foot vertical drop.
How about Dale? Is he okay? Schrader has climbed out of his car. He and Earnhardt crashed together between turns 3 and 4. Look at us.
Earnhardt would later be pronounced dead at the Halifax Medical Center. The cause of death was blunt force trauma and a basal skull fracture. Earnhardt's head whipped forward so hard on impact it caused ring fractures at the base of his skull. These kind of breaks can cut arteries, cause rapid blood loss, and destroy nerve cells that control things like breathing and heart rate. In other words, they can be fatal. 2 things to note here. One, NASCAR has something to prevent such an injury. It's called a Hans device, and it's sort of like a harness with straps that attach to the driver's helmet, preventing the head from flying forward in a head-on crash. But the Hans device wasn't mandatory at the time, and Earnhardt didn't wear one because he felt it was uncomfortable. Secondly, Earnhardt's seatbelt was broken, but it was found later that it had been installed improperly. Again, Earnhardt was desiring comfort over safety. Regardless, the maker of that seatbelt, Simpson Performance Products, received so much criticism after the crash that its owner, Bill Simpson, would leave the company 5 months later, saying that the stress was just too much. Simpson recovered from the controversy surrounding Earnhardt's death, probably due mainly to his reputation for creating products that made racing safer, a reputation that landed him in the Motorsports Hall of Fame in 2003. Parachutes on dragsters? That was his invention. Fireproof racing suits? That was his too, something he demonstrated multiple times by lighting himself on fire. He had also been making racing helmets as far back as 1979. So now I want to fast forward, a decade after the Earnhardt tragedy, to 2011. By this time, Bill had become friends with Tom Moore, who was the offensive coordinator of the Indianapolis Colts. Bill wasn't a football fan, but Moore lured him to a game with a sideline pass. And during that game, Bill was shocked when Colts receiver Austin Colley was carted off the field after suffering a serious concussion. Here's Bill Simpson.
You know, Austin Colley had a horrendous crash, if you will. You can't, you know, I don't know, collision. Mm-hmm. And he had a major concussion. And then I said, they took him out on a stretcher, you know. Mm-hmm. And I told Tom, I said, what's all that about, you know? And he says, shit, he says, that happens at every game. I said, get out of here. I said, you got to be kidding me.
Bill asked Moore for a Colts helmet. He wanted to test one to see how it stacked up. The Colts gave him three, and he wasn't impressed with anything that he saw.
And I tested them, and I ended up taking them back to the Colts, and I said, here they are. You know, and they said, well, what's the result? I said, I killed all three of your football players. What? I said, let me tell you something. I wouldn't put a helmet like that on my dog. And they got very defensive about that and said, do you think you could do better? I said, I'll bet you I could do better on my first try. So, well, they said, well, just have at it, and you'll have the Colts at your disposal. I said, fine.
By this time, Bill had sold his second racing gear company, Impact Race Products. But now he had a new mission, to build a better football helmet. And there was plenty of room for improvement. After all, football helmets were more or less the same since the 1950s or 60s. It's a stark difference compared to auto racing, which is always working to improve safety. After Earnhardt's death, for instance, NASCAR made a whole host of changes. They would soon make the Hans device mandatory. They would install softer walls at many of their tracks, these walls that would give on impact. They'd even redesign the cars themselves to make them safer. And in the 18 years since that tragic day at Daytona, there has not been a fatality in a NASCAR race. Meanwhile, football helmets have pretty much remained static. Hard plastic outer shell, foam pads on the inside, heavy steel bar face masks. Bill thought he could do better, and he told the Colts as much. But it was a challenge taking all of that knowledge from one sport and applying it to another. He says he invented new curse words during the 2-year stretch he spent working on his helmet. Now, one of the main areas he focused on was weight. Football helmets are heavy, much heavier than racing helmets. Bill explains why that's important.
Take a piece of drywall, for example, 1-inch drywall, and throw a 5-pound weight at it at exactly the same velocity, let's say 20 miles an hour. Okay, if it's a 5-pound ball, it's going to put a hell of a dent in that drywall. If it's a 1-pound ball, the dent is almost not noticeable.
So basically, what we're talking about here is Newton's second law of motion. That's the physics in play, and that's Force equals mass times acceleration. If two objects are going the same speed, the one that has more mass, is heavier, is going to bring more force. When you think about that ball Bill is talking about containing a head, which contains a skull, which contains a brain, you could see why this would matter and why this was his focus. So to reduce weight, Bill experimented with different materials. Instead of a solid steel face mask, he went with a chrome moly steel tubing. And instead of the typical hard plastic shell, he used materials common in auto racing helmets. Things like carbon fiber, Kevlar, fiberglass, and boron ceramic. His shell, fully painted, weighed less than 2 pounds.
The helmets that we were testing were probably 6 pounds. The helmet that we were building was 1 pound, 8 ounces.
Bill also focused on the inner padding, and this was a major challenge because racing helmet padding was designed to absorb the impact by breaking apart. So after a wreck, the driver would have to just throw his helmet out and replace it. Obviously, this doesn't work in football. You can't afford to be constantly replacing your helmet after a series of constant collisions. So Bill came up with a special kind of foam designed to absorb the impact while also maintaining its shape. And he also lined the entirety of the helmet with foam, as opposed to inserting the individual pieces like you see in football helmets.
The helmets that we were testing that were other brands, the liners were segmented, little pieces that would drop in that would be 2 inches by 3 inches in the circumference of the helmet. Our liner was press fit, one piece, 360 degrees. So when there was an impact, instead of it just utilizing that one little area that, let's say, is 2 by 3 inches, it would be the whole circumference of 23 inches that would dissipate the energy. So that's the technical part of the thing. I mean, it sounds really easy, but it was very difficult to get to that.
Along the way, Bill teamed with Chip Ganassi, and SG Helmets was born. It took them 2 years to come out with their first helmet, and when they did, Bill claims his was 3 to 4 times more effective than the Colts helmets he tested.
There's a law in the state that if they're playing football and they have an injury, they have to fill out a form, and it's a state law. At the end, we were in pretty good shape. Well, I'll tell you what kind of shape we were in. 16,000 kids playing football in central Indiana. With 52 known minor concussions. The two competitors that were out there, their concussion rate was about 22%, 1 in 5 kids.
But Bill found out that making the helmet was actually the easy part. Gaining acceptance in the football world was a whole other headache. As anyone who has listened to this series knows, the NFL has a tendency to not always deal so well with criticism, especially if it's coming from outside their circle. Dr. Bennett Omalu found that out when he started sharing his knowledge about the dangers of CTE. And Jason Lukasiewicz, the lawyer who launched what would eventually become a billion-dollar concussion settlement, and whose story we told in Episode 7, found that out as well. And Bill Simpson is, to put it plainly, he's blunt. He's 79 years old, and he's been making safety equipment for decades. He doesn't suffer fools, he doesn't have patience for marketers and PR types, and if he sees something that smells funny to him, he's going to come right out and say, it smells funny to him. But in turn, it seems the NFL didn't have a lot of patience for him.
And along the way, we had one roadblock after another. It was nonstop, and I built 3 sets of 2 helmets, and I did my own testing in my lab, and had the documentation for what the that looked to the NOCSI standard, where the severity index is the force of the blow.
NOCSI is the National Operating Committee on Standards for Athletic Equipment, which doesn't test products, but it sets the standards that must be met for all of this equipment.
To pass NOCSI, it's under 1,200 SI. That's just a number, 1,200, okay? Any of the helmets that we've tested or that we did test the severity index was up around 700 to 800. Ours was down around 3. All right, and G's, you know what G is, a G-force. The G's on our, not our competitors, because we certainly were never a competitor to any of those guys, but the G-forces on those guys' helmets were in the 90s to 120. In ours, it was 40 to 50.
His own testing documentation in hand, Bill took his helmets to Virginia Tech, where Dr. Stefan Duma runs a helmet testing lab, the first of its kind to issue a 5-star rating for football helmets. But the test results there, Bill said, were vastly different from his. He said they were terrible results. So puzzled, he took his helmets to Dave Halstead at Southern Impact Research Center in Rockford, Tennessee. Halstead confirmed Bill's original test results.
And Dave Halstead, bless his heart, man, he's about the only honest guy in that business. He got on the phone and he called Doomy. He says, "What the hell's going on here? Did you guys not calibrate your machine? What's happened?" And then Dumas tells him, "Oh, well, we had an intern that was running and he just fucked everything up." That was the documentation that they gave me. I went through those kind of things, you know, once every 3 or 4 months.
I reached out to Dr. Dumas, and he said he didn't remember this specific encounter with Bill, but that he is confident in his testing methods.
Yeah, this is 4 or 5 years ago. You know, his big focus early on was these really monster drop heights that nobody really uses and don't really apply to football. And his helmet did well with those and did a lot better than the other football helmets. But, you know, it's not really what we at all really test or evaluate here. So when he came in our lab and we tested it the way we evaluate our football helmets, you know, his did well, but not that well.
So it could be that Bill was more focused on testing for auto racing type collisions, while Dr. Duma was testing for more football style collisions. Regardless of what happened in this particular incident, it should be noted that the most recent Virginia Tech ratings do have an SG helmet on its 5-star list.
It tests well. It just, in his mind, it was going to be the best helmet ever. And it wasn't the number one helmet, and it wasn't the best, but it's still a very good helmet. Yeah, we give it a 5-star rating.
At the time, though, Bill was only growing more frustrated. Later, at a meeting with NFL safety consultants, he got into a verbal confrontation and walked out.
I'm not an easy guy to get along with, but I do know my business. I've been building helmets for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. Every time I would do something, it was met with resistance because it was so different.
The final straw came last spring when the NFL released the results of its own helmet testing. It came out in a glossy color poster that would be placed in NFL locker rooms. At the top, in green, were the top performing helmets, according to NFL tests. It was led by two models from a relative newcomer out of Seattle called Vices. Vices has received at least $500,000 in grant money from the NFL, and its current investors include NFL quarterbacks Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers. Now, this is not to suggest that Vices does not make a good helmet at all, but I think it's worth pointing out here that there is a strong connection to the league. Down at the bottom of the poster in red, amongst a group of banned helmets, were two of Simpson's models. To this day, he claims they never tested his latest helmet, but early prototypes.
And they claim that they had tested the latest model helmet? That's bullshit. What they tested was a prototype from 2011, and they published that. I was going to sue the NFL. Finally, I said, fuck that. I'm 79 years old. I don't need to be getting into this anymore. I'm done. Full plug. And that's what I did. I just shut that place down. I said, I'm done. Period. So that's in a nutshell what happened. To me, I mean, I've always made the Rolls Royce of anything I've done. And you could go out and talk to anybody that's ever used a Simpson product, and they'll tell you, compared to the competition, the stuff was always at least a bar ahead. And my football helmet was not a bar ahead. It was 300% more effective than what they were doing. And I watched all that, you know, I watched it all unfold, and I said, I don't want no part of this. I want no part of it. I've never been more shocked by an attitude of people than I am with what's going on in that business.
Hello, friends. Bob Harkins taking a moment to tell you once again about our friends at Cool Fire Studios, a wonderful graphic design, printing, and art studio. If you need a t-shirt, bumper stickers, banners, flags, whatever, anything to make a splash, Cool Fire Studios artists can make something special just for you. And this isn't just logos on t-shirts. We're talking about really cool and unique artwork, which you can see a great example of by taking a look at our official Raised Sports t-shirts over on the website. So check out Cool Fire Studios. That's cool with a K. CoolFireStudios.com. So Bill had reached his breaking point. He was done with the NFL, which is a little ironic because he never really even wanted to make helmets for NFL players, but rather for kids in high school age or younger. The lighter helmet, he thought, was key for these younger players who were less developed physically. But the NFL has a lot of clout, not only financially, but in the culture. So a stamp of approval, or the unfortunate opposite, can be crucial for a helmet company. And Bill just didn't have the patience to court love from the league. This is where Nick Asayan enters the picture. Like Bill, Nick comes from the racing world. He's competed in, by his count, more than 700 races in sports car series, including the Pirelli World Challenge Series. He also has a football background and currently coaches Pop Warner. Nick knew football was in trouble, especially at the youth level, where he's seen participation dropping, just like everybody has. He believed the sport needed to be made safer. He also knew Bill Simpson and believed in his skills as an engineer. So he approached him about purchasing SG helmets. Here's Nick.
They were kind of the black sheep out of the football helmet companies, and I just felt that once I talked to Bill, he didn't seem too enthusiastic about selling, but I knew he was stuck. He's a brilliant engineer, but he's not necessarily a football guy or a marketing guy. So we tried to buy the company in 2017, and Bill, we got to a certain point, he was not interested in selling. Then in 2018, I called him and said, hey, my son's going to play Pop Warner football. Now that I've looked under the hood at all these helmets, I wouldn't want him wearing anything other than your helmet. So he sent me a helmet, and I sent him a picture of my son with a little note saying that, hey, I was the 100-pound kid that went to high school that got kind of picked on, and he didn't really have an identity. And then, you know, football for me was a big transitional event or process in my existence, and I wanted my son to experience that and others. And then the next day, Bill called me and said, I should have sold the company to you a year ago, and we ended up making the acquisition, shoring it up in September.
The transition took place last year, and SG Helmets has now been rebranded as Light Helmets, a simple name and a nod to their focus and maybe the greatest feature of their product. They're changing some things, such as the padding and liners. They're making interchangeable liners, for instance, so that as players grow, they can replace the liner without buying an entirely new helmet. But like Bill, Nick also believes weight is the key. Unlike Bill, he's more focused on the importance of working with the NFL, whether he agrees with their testing methods or not. The light helmet still weighs between 2.5 to 3 pounds, roughly 2 pounds lighter than most other helmets. And as mentioned earlier, they do possess a 5-star rating from Virginia Tech. The next step is passing the NFL testing to move up out of that banned zone.
Bill was not a, his opinion was he was not in congruence with the NFL in their testing. He felt that weight was a much bigger issue, and he felt that the test results we're not reflecting what was happening on the field, and his validation for that, and we agree with him to a point, is that, hey, the number of concussions are not decreasing on the field. How you're testing, which is putting a helmet on a head form and having it sit there sedentary and a pneumatic ram crash into it, it doesn't take into account weight or head whip or a person's ability to have their neck resist or stop this weight on their head from snapping around. And, you know, there's a ton of articles on the internet from universities and medical journals, et cetera, that a stronger neck adds or reduces concussions. And reducing weight, in theory, does exactly the same thing, right? It's because you're not, your neck is not having to manage as much force.
Dr. Duma, though, disagrees, and he would point to the fact Nick uses the words in theory when talking about the benefits of a lighter helmet. He says there is no scientific evidence that shows a pound or two difference in weight makes any difference at all.
Yeah, there's a lot of debate on weight. I would say there's a lot of just anecdotal statements, but the reality is there's no study that shows the differences in weights makes any difference in head injury risk. And the differences are small. They're all around 3.5 pounds. The heavier ones are around 4.5 pounds. Some of the lighter ones are 2.5 pounds. So a pound plus or minus difference, no one's been able to show that makes any real difference. In the laboratory, a little heavier helmet reduces head accelerations because it gives you a greater inertial response.
So you have some who say the weight of the helmet matters, citing common sense physics like Newton's second law of motion, and questioning the way some tests are administered. And you have others saying it doesn't matter all that much, citing a lack of laboratory evidence to back the claim. So you have all these efforts to make football safer, but competing ideas on how to do so. Meanwhile, the NFL reported a 23.8% drop in concussions in the 2018 season. But here's the thing. Nobody knows why. Is it better helmets, new rules on hitting, or maybe just a one-year statistical outlier? Nobody knows at this point. One thing everyone seems to agree on, however, even the best helmet imaginable will only reduce danger, not eliminate it. Here's Nick again.
I don't think that any helmet technology alone will mitigate all chance of concussion, because you can only make the helmet so big, and the more weight you add, the more stress you're putting on the base of the skull and neck when people's heads are snapping around. And just like a boxer, when somebody gets hit in the chin in the boxing ring, that they're not getting knocked out from just the kinetic energy to their brain. It's from the head snap and the head whip of the brain stem. And I don't think we'll ever be able to eliminate those. But what we can do is maximize, and we're getting closer to that point now with the materials, to provide within a reasonable sized helmet the ability to mitigate those impacts.
Dr. Duma agrees with that. He compared it to automobile safety. Cars are so much safer these days with airbags and advanced seatbelts, yet more than 30,000 people die in car crashes every year. You can't eliminate the risk completely. So if you can't create a helmet that eliminates concussions, what can you do? Do helmets need to be rethought completely? Do we need a completely new material? Should they be soft shell? Should we get rid of face masks? Bill Simpson, who spent a career crafting and selling helmets, has a unique angle on the whole thing. He says to get rid of them completely.
Limit the weight of the players to 225 or some number. Pick a number. That's the maximum that guy can weigh. Not 380 pounds. Okay, limit the weight and don't use helmets. I watch football, and it's like, I think the helmet does more damage than if you didn't have it.
Watch any football game, and you can see some truth in what Bill is saying. Players get low to make tackles or gain that extra yard, and they ignore the fact that they are putting their heads in harm's way in the process. Perhaps they'd play differently if they didn't have that armor around their skull. Unfortunately, this idea also ignores why people started wearing helmets in the first place, to prevent skull fractures and other outer head injuries. So it's a dilemma. Do you protect the outer head or the brain inside it? Because so far, the only way to accomplish both is to not play at all. Thanks for listening to the Raised Sports Podcast. For more on this story, check out our show notes on the website, raisedsports.com, where we have some links to further reading on helmet safety, as well as the stories of Bill Simpson and Nick Asayan. This show was written and produced by me, Bob Harkins. Music credits for the show go to Lobo Loco, and the theme song comes from DL Sounds. Remember, we have a special this month only. Join our club at patreon.com. For as little as a dollar a month, and we'll have a drawing at the end of February for a raised sports t-shirt, created exclusively for us by Cool Fire Studios. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.